Welcome back to the Sports Ticket, joined now by Matthew Derrick of ChiefsDigest.com. Does a wonderful job covering the Chiefs. We had Matthew on many times before, and we always enjoy his time on the show to talk Chiefs football. And Matthew's been following what the Chiefs have been doing so far in the offseason and getting ready for the NFL draft. Matthew, how's your offseason gone so far?
Not quite as busy as Brett Veach's, but still been a pretty busy offseason and getting ready to have a fun couple days ahead.
It really will be, and I tell you, the Chiefs already made their first-round draft pick, didn't they?
Yeah, they really did. I mean, going into this draft, as the consensus of everyone was that this team needed to come out of the draft with a left tackle. And essentially, that first-round pick is Orlando Brown Jr., and that is one heck of a first-round pick for the Chiefs.
It is. Were you surprised the Chiefs are able to do this with, of all teams, the Ravens? And then on top of it, I was surprised the Chiefs, I mean, they gave up some picks, but they got the second-rounder back, and they only had to give up one first-round pick. I was surprised at how, it seems crazy to say with the amount of picks involved, but I thought the Chiefs got off fairly cheap to acquire him.
Yeah, honestly, I do too. I mean, I did not think that this kind of deal was going to get done, and certainly not at the value that the Chiefs got. I mean, you know, the Ravens are shipping a really good player to a position of drastic need for their toughest competition for the AFC Championship. I mean, that alone seemed to be a little bit of a stumbling block to getting a deal done. And then, you know, the Chiefs certainly had a ceiling as far as how much that they were willing to go. They didn't want to just get a first-round straight-up pick for Orlando Brown, and that's why, you know, this ended up being a little bit more of a complicated deal, but they were able to figure it out. I mean, there's a lot of questions I still have. I mean, is there something about Orlando Brown that the Ravens know that the Chiefs don't?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how much of, because at face value, this was simply the Ravens had a player in Orlando Brown who wanted to play left tackle, had specific, you know, personal reasons for that being important to him, had proven that he could play there, was not in their long-term plans because they'd already given the long-term contract to Ronnie Stanley, and they knew that he was not going to be happy. He did it professionally. He didn't blow his way out of Baltimore, you know, wanted to go find a place to play and did it the right way. And you know, and I don't know how much does the relationship between John Harbaugh and Andy Reid play in this too? And this, because this looks like a gentleman's trade with two teams that had a player that was unhappy with his position and where he was, wanted to go somewhere else where he could play the spot that he wanted, and two teams figured it out. And if that's the case, I mean, it's a win-win for everybody. But it certainly looks like on paper that this is a much bigger win for the Chiefs.
Oh, I agree. You know, it's funny, but when we were talking in the off season, right after the season ended and the Chiefs offensive line got blown to smithereens with backup right tackle, left tackle due to injuries of Fisher and Schwartz, you know, everybody said the Chiefs need to get a couple tackles. They got to redo the offensive line. And you looked at the guys that were out there and, you know, Trent Williams' name was dangled out there. And then I saw some people talking about Orlando Brown. And my first reaction was, there's no way the Ravens are going to trade him to the Chiefs. And by golly, they did. I couldn't believe it. But let's go backwards for a moment. You know, the Chiefs were in it till the very end with Trent Williams to try to bring him in. And I said on the show when they were talking about it, and I said it after it didn't work out and he re-signed with the 49ers, that could be a blessing in disguise, because the thing that really held me back with Trent Williams, 32 years of age. And Orlando Brown now you bring in. And listen, you're going to pay, if Orlando Brown works out this year and you end up tagging him next year or you give him your long-term extension, you're going to give a lot of money to Orlando Brown, or you could have given a lot of money to Trent Williams. I'd rather give it to Orlando Brown, who is going to turn 25 next week, than give it to a 32-year-old left tackle. So I think this may have actually worked out perfectly for the Chiefs.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, that was my concern with the Trent Williams. Is with the age. I mean, you, especially since you were going to be committing some big money and for a long-term deal to a player in his age 36, 37 seasons. With Orlando Brown, doesn't turn 25, you know, until, what, Sunday?
Yeah.
Still technically 24. A really young guy. I mean, even if you do, like you said, I mean, you could franchise tag at 22, but even a long-term deal, you're going to be buying his late 20s. That to me, I mean, even if you end up having to give him a Trent Williams type deal, which there's no guarantee. I mean, you know, this could certainly be a more friendly contract. But if that's the case, then yeah, you're absolutely buying a player's younger, more productive seasons. So I'm with you. I mean, I think that the Trent Williams deal might have been something that looked really good for a year or two, but at some point that might turn. With Brown, I mean, there's some questions. You know, I mean, it's, how is he going to fit into the offense? You know, what's going to be his ideal playing weight? There's still some questions there, but I think what you saw last season gives you plenty of reasons to be optimistic. And clearly, I think Orlando Brown is head and shoulders a better option than anyone would be at 31 in the draft this year.
Totally agree with you. Matthew Derrick at Chiefs Digest with us today to talk Chiefs and preview the NFL draft for the Chiefs. They will not draft tomorrow night unless they move back up in the first round, have two second-round picks they will take or make on Friday. You know, Brown is interesting because, you know, when he played at Baltimore, they were more of a run-dominated team, as we know. And Lamar Jackson ran the ball a lot. J.K. Dobbins, they didn't throw the ball. They're not really a drop-back passing team. The Chiefs, of course, are, although they have an offense where they can get the ball out of the hands of Mahomes pretty quickly. Of course, that didn't happen in Super Bowl 55. Do you think that'll be that big of an adjustment for Brown, going from really a run-oriented offense to a pass-happy offense?
Yeah, I'd be curious. I mean, there's reason to be optimistic because in, you know, passing downs last season, especially on the left side, Orlando Brown was really productive. Now, you know, in Lamar Jackson, you've got a quarterback that, as elusive as Patrick Mahomes is, Lamar Jackson's more so. So that is an ability that, you know, can help out an offensive line, help their stats a little bit when it comes to the sack numbers. But even his pressures, I mean, across the board, in quarterback hits, I mean, all over across the board, the numbers are pretty solid. Now, over, you know, adjusting for a full season at left tackle and adjusting for the more frequent pass numbers that the Chiefs have, honestly, Orlando Brown's numbers start to look a little bit more like Eric Fisher. And if that's the case, that's great. I mean, the Chiefs would love if he can be as productive as Eric Fisher has been. I mean, to me, the real question is going to be just kind of how he fits in, because you're building chemistry across an all-new offensive line. Patrick Mahomes is going to need to get used to Orlando Brown and kind of what his style is. Mm-hmm. He's going to need to get used to Mahomes and what he likes best and where he needs to be protected. And like I said, I mean, Wade is a good question. I mean, when he showed up in Kansas City this week, Brown looked pretty good. I mean, he looked pretty trim. You know, I talked to some evaluators in the last couple of days who said that, you know, they thought that Brown last season, he's listed at like 350, 355. They thought he might have been playing 370, 380 last year. And at that weight in Kansas City, it wouldn't fly. I mean, he's going to have to be a little more trim. And if that's the case and he's able to get a little bit more quickness, then I think that would definitely be a big help.
I agree with you. All right, what are the implications of Orlando Brown joining the Chiefs? And here's what I mean by that. Looking down the line, the financial implications. So it's about $3.6 million against the cap this year in his rookie deal, and then the Chiefs could franchise tag Orlando Brown or give him the long-term extension we talked about. Does this affect in any way other Chiefs in regards to their financial situations, such as a Frank Clark going into next year? Would the Chiefs maybe cut bait with him after next season? Tyrann Mathieu, will the Chiefs be looking at an extension with Tyrann Mathieu? Does this delay that, or does that speed up the process? Give me an idea of maybe some of the implications when you bring in so many good players. You've got Mahomes long-term signed. You got Kelsey taken care of, Hill's taken care of. You got Chris Jones taken care of. You know, eventually you only have so much money with the cap.
Yeah, and you know, and I don't know if the Orlando Brown addition changes too much of the equation, because I think that there were going to be decisions made along the road anyway. Uh-huh. You know, next year is kind of an out decision with Frank Clark's contract as is. So, you know, that was going to be a situation regardless of whether or not you have Orlando Brown and you're trying to shoehorn him in. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got to kind of make a decision on Frank Clark separately. But, you know, honestly, I mean, you know, what the Chiefs are going to have is a left tackle and a left guard making a lot of money. I mean, with Joe Tooney. So when you get to 22, yeah, those two guys are going to be making the lion's share of the money on that line. the way that you make it work is that you really need a guy like Niang to come forward and be able to give you 3-4 cheap years effectively at right tackle. You know, they signed Austin Blythe as an affordable option at center. You really, what the Chiefs need to do is to find their center and right guard of the future here pretty soon. Or they're going to be journeyman type solutions like Austin Blythe. I mean, that's what you're just going to have. I mean, the Chiefs in the last few seasons, I mean, they were paying Eric Fisher and Mitchell Schwartz all the money and then just kind of getting by with the most affordable solutions on the interior. Now, to me, it's just changing the positions. You're still going to be paying Brown and Tooney a lot of money. You're just going to have to get the other three positions right and be affordable. And if Niang can come forward and be an effective right tackle, that's a big boost for this offense over the next 4 years.
I would agree with you there as well. What about Tyrann Mathieu's situation with the contract extension? Where does that stand right now?
Yeah, I mean, both sides are being pretty cagey about it. I mean, there's been some discussions, and it seemed like that maybe they were fairly close to a deal early in the off season, and whether that was true and it just didn't get done because both teams had a little bit of cold feet, hard to say. But you know, Tyrann Mathieu with his extension, I mean, there's no doubt he wants to be one of the highest paid safeties in the league. Which means, you know, you're going to have to get to that $15-16 million per. And, you know, and the only reason really that there was a lot of speculation that the extension might get done in March or the beginning of the new league year was that the Chiefs needed some salary cap relief. Well, they got that with parting ways with Schwartz and Fisher. So, you know, they don't have that same cap situation. They can afford to wait a little bit longer. And, you know, this is what happened last year. I mean, remember, all the deals got done late in June and July with Mahomes, Jones, and Kelsey. So it would not surprise me at all if that's kind of the timeline with Mathieu, if this ends up being a June, July before it gets done. I think it will get done because both sides seem to want to get it done. And if that's the case, I think that, yeah, it's probably done before the beginning of training camp. But if not, I could still see both teams continuing to talk until the beginning of the season.
All right, so let's address the offensive line reconstruction. You touched upon it. You got Toomey at left guard. You've got Orlando Brown now your left tackle. Blythe is the center. But the right side of the line, I don't know if it's really set in stone yet. I mean, Tardif, after opting out, is back. You got Kyle Long. I would think there's some competition there between those two, maybe for right guard. You know, Allegretti might be able to push. He played pretty well at times last year. I'm sure he'll be a candidate in regards to a rotation guy. He could play some guard or, of course, play center. And then right tackle, you mentioned Niang, which would be I'm sure they want him to fill that spot. That'd be terrific. He opted out last year. You got Rimmers as some insurance. You got Wiley. After a while, I'm sitting there going, how many linemen do the Chiefs have? You know, half their team are linemen. But where do you see the Chiefs starting offensive line looking like on that right side at right guard and right tackle? Do you think it's Tardif basically is going to be right guard and then ideally Niang at right tackle?
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting because those are the biggest competitions. I mean, I do think there'll be a little bit of competition too at center. Blythe certainly seems to be the front runner, but I wouldn't surprise me if Allegretti gets in the mix. And you know, I mean, Andy Reid and Brett Veach have both opened the door to Joe Tooney even playing center, which, you know, would then bring left guard into discussion in the mix. And don't leave out Andrew Wiley, who the Chiefs re-signed and brought back, too. So, yeah, to me, right guard's a really big, you know, question because the Chiefs have a lot of numbers there. But they got a lot of question marks. You know, we don't really know with, you know, Tardif and Kyle Long both being away from football for a period of time, you know, where are they? You know, can you expect them to come in and be the same players that they were the last time we saw them on the field? We don't know that. I would expect Tardif to probably start as the incumbent there, but I do think there might be some competition. And right tackle, Andy Reid's typically the kind of guy who wants, you know, young players to earn their spot. So it would not surprise me at all if we see Mike Rimmers starting the offseason as the right tackle. But they want Lucas Niang to absolutely win that job, and I think they're going to want to push him to win that job too. So that wouldn't surprise me. But you know, and also you mentioned it. They got a lot of guys there, so I can't rule out, you know, maybe they're going to be using some of these guys as currency in trade. So it wouldn't be surprising if they do some shopping. But the other key for this offensive line to remember to me, too, is that outside of Brown, Tooney, and Niang, no one else is really signed beyond 21, which is why, to me, you know, offensive line, even with all these bodies we're talking about, could remain a draft option because, you know, the Chiefs do need some long-term solutions along that line.
All right, so that leads me to the next question. Right now, the Chiefs have two second-round picks, the 58th overall pick, the 63rd overall pick. Now, granted, they could package those two, move up in the second round. Maybe they can sneak back in the first if there's a guy they really covet and wants. Perhaps they even trade down from where they are in the second round. Who knows what might happen? But what we do know right now is that they have those picks, 58 and 63. So what do you, where do you think, what direction you think the Chiefs will go position-wise with those two picks?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I mean, the Chiefs feel really good in the sense that they don't feel like they're going to this draft where they have to come out with a position,
right?
Which, you know, is where you want to be. I mean, if you're going to a draft where you've got to come out with a certain player at a certain spot, that's usually how you end up making bad decisions. And Brett Veach doesn't have to look any further than Breland Speaks to remember that.
Yeah.
But that said, I mean, you know what? Edge rusher really remains their biggest one. I mean, that's the spot where I think they would be willing to even move up if the player that they want and they covet is available and they feel like that's where they need to go. I do think that the Chiefs are going to double down on targets for Patrick Mahomes, so wide receiver is certainly an option with one of those picks for certain. There's a couple of linebackers that it looks like the Chiefs have been interested in as well, so wouldn't surprise me for them to go there. Those an offensive line, particularly interior players, to me seem like the top picks. But you know what? Brett Veach mentioned it, and I would agree. I mean, almost anything but quarterback is an option for this team. I would probably say running back is not going to be a top priority.
Right.
But otherwise, I mean, you know, the Chiefs could really go any direction.
I, when I look at it, there are three positions that stand out to me, and that's why, well, actually it's an athletic linebacker, whether he's an edge rusher, a guy that has athleticism like a Willie Gay, because Anthony Hitchens is, of course, getting a little long in the tooth, and they eventually got to have somebody to replace him. So because the Chiefs sometimes will be vulnerable to stretch plays with the speed sideline to sideline, Matthew kind of fills that bill at times, almost like he's a linebacker, Sorensen at times too. I would love to see them get a guy like that. And then, of course, you mentioned wide receiver, which I think that's a $64,000 question, because they have guys in place that could be the answers. Hill's one. Hardman right now would be two. You know, Pringle, I've always liked Pringle. Of course, he has a little bit of an injury history. DeMarcus Robinson is back. But the question I keep hearing people say is, how comfortable can the Chiefs be with Mecole Hardman being their number two? And I can counter that and say, listen, their one and two is Kelce and Hill. I mean, Kelce's like a wide receiver. But still, to the point about Mecole Hardman, does it have a lot to do with how they feel about Mecole Hardman in regards to how they address perhaps where they go with one of these second-round picks?
Yeah, it really does. And, you know, to a large degree, it's, I don't even know as much as they really feel about Mecole Hardman as much as it is that what Mecole Hardman has shown them. I mean, he's had 2 years, and we really haven't seen Mecole Hardman have that breakout yet. And I think that's why the Chiefs would be a little bit more on the lookout. Not only that, but, you know, they're looking for a true X-type receiver. I mean, someone who really kind of fits that same mold that Sammy Watkins had. Someone who can play a little bit more physical, somebody who can be a big target. You know, they've got a lot of guys with some speed and an ability on the outside, a little bit of slot guys, but they really, that's the one thing they're missing is maybe that, you know, 6'2" guy with a lot of reach. You know, in this draft among players who could fall their spot, a guy like Terrence Marshall from LSU is probably the model, and somebody I know is certainly high on their list. And I'm interested that you mentioned linebacker as well, because Nick Bolton from Missouri is a player that, you know, they've shown some interest in, and and he kind of fits that model a little bit as a linebacker who can drop back, who can cover, maybe do some of the things that Willie Gay can't do. And you know, whereas Willie Gay can be, they feel like maybe that aggressive player with some athleticism who can run around. Bolton's the kind of guy that could really pair well with that. That, you know, can be the drop back guy who can, you can trust in coverage, but at the same time is going to hit some people. I think would be a really good compliment at linebacker.
Two positions we haven't talked much about in regards to the draft, but maybe there's still a need there, is corner. Breland's going, you know, odds are Breland's not going to be on this team. Has he signed anywhere, Breland, by the way?
He has not. Okay. I believe he's had a couple of visits, but he is still available.
Okay. You expect Snead probably to slide into his spot. At least that's what many people believe. And you've got some other number, you know, players. You've got guys that can play safety slash corner and so forth and so on. So corner is intriguing because I don't think they have to go get somebody in the second round of that position. But if there's a really good guy there, like you said, they have the luxury of getting basically the best player available because there's not a drastic need that they have now that they address left tackle. And then another one that I've been thinking about, I think you and I might have even talked about this before, Matthew, and that is Travis Kelce. I think that the clock is ticking on him in regards to having an injury of some kind. I mean, he takes a lot of punishment. He gets the ball a lot. I think, what is he? Is he 30 years old? I just wonder how long he can hold up. And you've talked about it before many times that the Chiefs over the last, you know, handful of years, they look at drafting a guy that's kind of going to be an heir apparent to take the torch from one guy and look down the line. Sometimes it's a contract situation. As we know, Kelce is locked up, so they're okay there. But what about maybe in the fourth round, maybe they can get a steal about finding that next tight end, because that's very important in Andy Reid's offense.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. Kelce's going to be 32 this fall.
That's right.
And remember, he is in uncharted territory to a large degree because, you know, outside of maybe some guys like Tony Gonzalez, maybe, and even then, Tony Gonzalez was not as productive at 31
right.
as Travis Kelce was last year. So, you know, yeah, you're really in uncharted territory as far as a guy at Kelce's age who's this good. And you're right. I mean, he's been remarkably injury-free, but, you know, one of the things I say is, you know, the last time the Chiefs had to play without Travis Kelce, really, was the second half of that playoff game against
yes.
Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
And I will tell you, if the Chiefs had Travis Kelce in that playoff game in the second half, they win.
Yes.
Or if they have somebody who could have filled in for Travis Kelce, I think they win. And that's the thing that I think they really have been playing with fire, is that if you have to play without Travis Kelce for an extended period of time, I mean, to me, that's almost as a big a deal as losing two tackles.
Yes.
I mean, he's that important to this offense. And, yeah, you're not going to just find another Travis Kelce. But there are guys out there who can be productive and be effective number two tight ends and be an heir apparent to a, you know, one day being a starter to replace him. And I feel like Chiefs play with fire, not finding that solution. So I think they're going to take a tight end every year, and they always surprise me when they don't. But you're right. This could be the year. And even in the middle rounds, I mean, Kelce himself was a third-round pick.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can find effective tight ends throughout the draft.
Absolutely. Matthew Derrick, Chiefs Digest, our guest today on the Sports Ticket. So if you were the general manager, you're Brett Veach, pick 58 and 63, what two positions are you taking?
I have a really hard time deciding between defensive end, edge rusher, wide receiver, and linebacker. I mean, it depends on who those players are that are there. You know, my two favorite guys that I think would fall into that category would be Terrace Marshall and Nick Bolton. But, you know, edge rusher is such a need that I could definitely see that being the guy that they go with. And there's a lot of options. I mean, there could be some really interesting players that fall to that spot. To me, you know, it's going to really be how this draft plays out. And I think that, a spot that the Chiefs have put themselves into a good place is that, because we've talked about, there's several different positions that they could go, that if there's a run on a certain position, you know, if edge rushers start to go off the board and that's where the Chiefs really want to go, hey, they've got the currency to move up and get the player that they want. But at the same time, you know, yeah, if there's a run on edge rushers, you know what? That means there's going to be some other positions where guys fall through the cracks. And if they want to bargain, maybe that's where they can just sit back and wait for a player to fall to them. So there's a couple different scenarios that could play out for them. And I'm really interested to see how it does play out. And the only thing I will predict is that I don't think that Brett Veach is going to stay put.
Yeah.
I don't think at 58 and 63, I don't think those are where he goes. I think Brett Veach moves around in this draft.
I agree with you on that as well. One more thing before we get to the off-the-wall question. You know, Jaron Reed, the Chiefs brought in, and you know, at least around here, there's not a lot of talk about that move. But the Chiefs have talked about how he can play inside. He was with the Seahawks. He's only 28. He's had some good years with the Seahawks. And then Chris Jones can play some more D-end in certain situations. What are your thoughts on that philosophy, and do you think it's something that could work for the Chiefs if Chris Jones played some more D-end instead of inside?
Yeah, I think it could definitely work. And it's certainly something that Chris Jones wants to do. I mean, he loves being able to go after the quarterback. And if playing a little bit more on the edge, you know, that allows him to do it, absolutely. You know, he's done that a lot more than I think people realize, especially in third down situations. The Chiefs have frequently, especially under Steve Spagnuolo, have really used Jones a little bit more on the edge. And you're right. Right now, I mean, as the Chiefs line up today, yeah, their best front four would be Chris Jones, Jaron Reed, Derek Nnadi, and Frank Clark. And, you know, we just might see that a little bit more frequently on first and second downs this year. But, yeah, I mean, edge rusher is still a possibility for this team just because they would like to be able to, you know, if you can have Jones and Reed both on the inside, that's going to be such a big help for Frank Clark. And, you know, he's underperformed. I mean, this contract, I don't think you can make an argument otherwise. And I think the Reed addition was a way for the Chiefs to try to figure out, hey, how can we get Frank Clark going? And Reed might be the kind of guy that he can play off and do that.
All right, time for the off-the-wall question for you, Matthew. Today is National Superhero Day. So my question to you is a two-part question. Who is your real-life superhero, and who would be your favorite fictional superhero?
Real life superhero would have been my mom. My mom was terrific. She was a single mom and worked and just was one of the most talented people I ever knew. She was an incredible artist, and there was nothing wrong with my mom. She was definitely my superhero. And a fictional superhero, when I was a kid, the one that I dressed up as, the uniform that I had, was Underdog.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about Underdog. I love it. So you stood out is what you're telling me.
I did. My mom made me an Underdog cape, so I had the cape.
Uh-huh.
And then I had a plastic ring that I wear on my hand with an M&M in it that was my super secret energy pill.
I love it. That's why I ask these questions. I never know where they're going to go. I would have never guessed Underdog. That is absolutely sensational.
The Underdog movie was terrible, but the old cartoon back in the day, that was my jam.
I never saw the movie, but I remember that cartoon very vividly now that you bring it up with Underdog. I always liked Underdog. Always liked
Sweet
Underdog.
Sweet Polly Purebred, you know, Simon. Yeah, that was
absolutely.
Those were some good ones.
Very cool, very cool. All right, Matthew, tell everybody how they can read your work and keep up with what the Chiefs are doing and your perspective.
Yeah, we'll have wall-to-wall coverage this weekend at ChiefsDigest.com. And you can follow me on Twitter, @MattDerrick. And you can keep up with us on Facebook. Just find Chiefs Digest.
Matt, as always, we appreciate the time. It'll be interesting to see what the Chiefs do. We'll talk to you again down the line and get ready for next year, which looks like the Chiefs are in pretty good shape to make another run at the Super Bowl.
Sounds like a plan. Thanks a lot, Wade.
Take care. Matthew Derrick at ChiefsDigest.com, our guest today on The Sports Ticket.